Welcome to the monthly Founders Lunch, and we're going to feature Cropzilla today. I'm Greg Pugh, thrilled to be here. Been with Rev One Ventures for 5 years. Love the enthusiasm that we get going here, and our mission is to help entrepreneurs build great companies. We do that with entrepreneurial services. We do that with investments. We do that with involving the community and the ecosystem in building companies. We are getting fabulous press, the whole area. Something special is happening in Columbus right now. Boats are floating up as the water rises. Last year, we were named by the Kauffman Group the fastest growing city for startup activity. This year, number one for scaling startups. So startups taking that next level. So we've got a lot of them, and they are producing. This just came out from CB Insights. They do a map of the United States each year, and they show the most active investment group in every state. And now Rev One Ventures is the number one in Ohio for investments made. It is press like this that is starting to drive inbound calls. The rest of the world is starting to take notice. We're seeing more activity. We're getting a lot of calls in. How can we be involved in what's going on in Columbus? So very, very exciting times. We always have great, exciting things going on, and a couple I want to highlight. Number one, a month ago, I was out in Grove City, and I got to see Cultivate, a beautiful space, a new incubator, and that's run by Matt Yerkes. Yerkes rhymes with circus. He is the ringleader of Cultivate in Grove City. Matt.
Hi. Thanks for giving me just a second to tell you about what we're doing. So yeah, we took this beautiful 100-year-old brick building down in our town center and created a business incubator space to provide workspace and coaching for startups. I've been involved in startups. It's my passion. And just to be able to have this place that we could put together to do what I love to do and help others do it as well has been really rewarding. So we have brought together all kinds of resources. We have support from the city of Grove City. We're partnered with Rev One. And we have Rampart is a software development team that's in-house. So we're just trying to pull all these different resources together. We have a restaurant in-house as well. So we can just bring in food for meetings and things like that and have coffee with customers and business partners. And Greg is actually going to be leading our Lunch and Learn series on August 9th. So just to invite you to that, free Lunch and Learn, August 9th. Greg's going to do the first one for us, and Rev One will be partnered with us to provide some of the speakers for our series. So just thank you for the opportunity to talk.
Thanks, Matt. Really cool coffee shop in the front of that place. Hardwood, big ceilings. One of the great things around here is we always have great news to share, and we have a bell out there. And when somebody has something exciting happen, they ring the bell. A company that's been ringing the bell a lot lately is PriorAuth Now. A lot of you guys know Mike Blackwell recently left Rev One Ventures, but he didn't go far. He's still in the building. He's now the COO of PriorAuth Now. Mike, you've got so much good going on. Could you share a little bit of the good news?
Yeah. It's true. I left Rev One, and I think I moved about 50 feet to the to my new office. But I would summarize really what's going on with PriorAuth Now with three bullet points. The first bullet point is we've hired a team. We have the horses now to kind of get all this done. So what happened was we went from about two people to, I think we're coming up on 12 people. Most of those are developers. So and really what made that possible is to pull together that team is we received funding. So we receive funding to the tune of about $1.6 million. So that helps us have a nice little runway. So that's been helpful for us as well. And the third thing, and what really made it possible, is we have a really nice pipeline going. So we have, well, it's really, depending on how much we're able to close over time, if we had the product up and running and we could turn it on with everyone now, it would actually be a few million dollars. So, so we have a lot of commitments, if you will, of potential partners to go ahead and turn it on. That's going to result in some pretty good amount of revenue for us. So that pipeline has helped a lot. I know a lot of you have heard over the years Concept Academy and everything going on. It's funny because we are still largely using a demo to land most of that pipeline. So we are living proof, if you will, that you can land multi-millions of dollars in potential revenue using largely prototypes. Now, we are building it, and we do show sort of the partially built thing and the prototypes, but it absolutely has worked. So those are kind of the summary and the big news.
Very exciting times. There's always seems like there's a party going on at Prior Auth now because they're closing business. There's other great things going on. Does anybody have anything they want to share? Good news in the startup community? All right, so we are featuring Cropzilla today. And I met this guy here. I saw him in the building a lot, never really talked to him. He was real quiet, he always seemed to be real serious. I have my first actual business meeting. Those of you who have been through a sales readiness assessment with me, that's what it was. And in the first few minutes, you're just kind of feeling out, getting the guy's experience level. Yeah, you don't want to talk over or under. And Dale just kind of looked at me and he said, all right, dude, let me just lay this on the line for you. Here's what's going on. And we've been getting along ever since. So the co-founder and COO of Cropzilla, Dale Jefferson.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for having us. Glad to be here today and tell you a little bit about what we're doing and how we do it and where we are and hopefully where we're going. I'm joined today with a few other Cropzilla folks, Brian Watkins, my co-founder, Mike Thompson, another co-founder, Dustin Walters, one of our employees, and Joel Gerber, one of our board members. So these guys are all up front and they can take questions after the session as well.
So tell us, you and the co-founders, what inspired you to start Cropzilla?
You know, there's a little bit of serendipity involved, I think. Mike and Brian had been working on a prototype back in 2011 or 12, basically a software proof of concept to solve some of Brian's problems that he was having on his farm. And Brian and I met getting our MBAs about the same time at Ohio State. And Brian's the farmer, Mike's the process engineer, and I'm the software guy, and it just kind of came together.
So when I describe Cropzilla, when somebody says, what do? I say it's when farming meets big data, predictive analytics, scenarios. You're going to put in all your factors on day one, and it's going to tell you what's going to happen on the farm this year with the variances of if it doesn't rain,
You're hired.
All right. Good, good. Dale, what did you do before Cropzilla? Is this your first startup? Is on your team, do you have startup experience?
We do. So I've been involved in one other startup. I've done a lot of corporate. Mike's been involved with some startups, and Brian's really grown his farm exponentially over the last 30 years. So we've got a good, solid team that knows how to grow something.
What was your role before you left to be with Start Cropzilla full-time?
So I ran a strategy group for a company called Autodesk, a big software, B2B software company. That's really where my experience is in the B2B software world over the last 20 years. Prior to that, I ran a strategy group for a company called Topcon Positioning, and before that, a startup. So
that sounds like a good career. You probably had a nice, stable salary, benefits. When did you know? What was it that made you have the confidence to put all that security aside? I met your daughter at a soccer game a few weeks ago to put everything at risk and join these other Yahoos, Michael, and get after it.
Yeah, well, I know where you're going with this. And you know what? There is no good answer. There's no right time. There's never going to be the perfect time to make the jump. That's the reality. We started the proof of concept back in 2012. We spent 2013 doing a lot of customer validation and raising some money. And then we started writing code in 2014. And by the end of 2014, and at this point, we still pretty much had day jobs to some extent or another. By the end of 2014, we realized that we were about to give birth to a software product. And when that happens, it's like you're the dog who caught the car. Now what do you do, right? So pretty much at that point, we all decided to really focus and go full-time, and we've been doing that ever since. The product actually launched commercially in March of 2015, so we've been in the market for a little over a year now, and it's been very good.
Last time I talked to you, you had 20-some clients. How many clients do you have now?
About 32, 33.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. So the number's going up?
Yeah.
Who are your customers? What's the profile of a Cropzilla customer now, in the beginning, the first 32, and might that change moving forward?
Sure. So right now, our average farm size is about 4,000 acres, give or take. And we've got farms throughout the Midwest into the Dakotas, as far west as California. We've got several customers now in Canada. And we just started working on our first test farm last week in Italy. So we do have a metric version, and it's open to the European market as well. prior to, you know, basically up to this point, we've been very focused, very opportunistic. Basically, if you're a farmer, if you grow a row crop, we want to talk to you. So it's, and that's kind of the life of an early startup, is just if you've got some money to spend, we want to talk to you. Moving forward, we're going to be a whole lot more strategically targeted on larger farms. So we hope to move that average up to about 6,000 acres, give or take. And we have access to a lot of information on telling us where customers are, what size they are, how we get to them, and things like that.
So my role, Rev 1, is to help companies sell more effectively early. One of the reasons I loved CropZilla early is you have a well-rounded founding team with varying skills. But as I talked to each of you individually, you were pitching, you were selling, you're not afraid to get in front of everybody. What's the importance of sales acumen on the founding team?
Well, here's the thing. I've met a lot of entrepreneurs with great ideas and great products and really great business plans and just super bright people. The one piece of advice I would give any entrepreneur just starting out is you have to start selling fearlessly as early as possible. And, you know, because selling, you know, trying to go to a customer and try to get them to pay you for something, it makes some people uneasy. And you just have to get over that, because the first step in success in a startup is just selling fearlessly. And go into it knowing that you're going to get rejected, you're going to look like an idiot half the time, you're going to screw it up, but just keep doing it over and over again, because the second step to success is really scaling that sales operation. And that's where we are now. We're currently raising a fund, or raising a round to scale our sales team. But I'll tell you, I've seen so many great ideas die on the vine because those early stage entrepreneurs aren't willing to just put it out there and just fearlessly go for it.
All right, you mentioned raising a round, and you mentioned before you raised a little money in the beginning.
Right.
That's always a topic of interest for entrepreneurs. How is that going for you?
It's going very well. So prior to this point, we had raised a couple small angel rounds. We're currently raising a larger round now to, like I said, scale a sales team and also scale our post-sales and all go-to-market activities. Because we're a SaaS company, it's all about customer retention, so we want to make sure that we're servicing our customers after the sale as well. But it's going very well. You know, even feedback this week, and this goes back to what I just said with fearlessly selling as early as possible, the fact that we have customers and we're not going to the capital markets saying, hey, give me some money to finish developing my product. I swear it's a great idea. But the fact that we've already validated it in the marketplace, we've validated our sales model and our revenue model, and we have customers, is even this week, like I said, I got some feedback that's making all the difference, and it's making it easier for us to make this pitch.
So what is the sales cycle? I know Mike told me a story where he saw a farmer out in the field. He pulled over, started talking to him. The next day, they were a client. I don't think they always go like that, but what's the sales cycle look like for CropZilla?
They go like that every time. No, I'm just kidding. And actually, this is very unique in that, you know, we have the luxury of pretty much always finding the decision maker right out of the gate. We talk to the person who's going to make the decision, yes or no, am I buying your product? There's no committee, there's no budgetary concern. It's not like selling into the Fortune 500. So that's a good thing for us. What we really bump up against in our market is seasonality. And seasonality affects pretty much all sales cycles and all markets to some extent or another, whether it's B2B or B2C. But you were telling me earlier that some of your educational-based technologies clients have the same problem. We have the problem of there's at least about 4 months out of the year where we can't touch our customers because they are either planting or they're harvesting two different times a year. And not only can we not touch them, if you try, you stand a chance of hurting that relationship, because for farmers, the planting season and harvest is, it's almost like a military operation. It's planning, and then execution. And if you get in the way of that or you distract from that, it can be very detrimental.
So in the entrepreneurial community here, we help each other. People are always, let's get you some leads right now. That's where I'm heading with this. So you want to talk to who? The decision maker is what size farm, where are they located?
Sure. So basically, we focus on farmers who grow row crops, who are...
Row crops, corn, soybeans, wheat.
Corn, soybeans, wheat, sugar beets, canola, alfalfa, it's a lot of things, right?
You grow canola?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a grain. And I say that like I'm an agricultural expert. I've been drinking from the fire hose for 4 years now, so I know some things about farming. But basically, anything you harvest with a combine, you know, the sweet spot for size is probably 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 acres, maybe a little bigger. Our smallest customer is about 1,200 acres. Our largest customer right now is about 12,500 acres. So, you know, you're probably based in the Midwest, but like I said, it could be about anywhere. There's probably 40,000 to 50,000, what I just described, there's about 40,000 or 50,000 of those folks right here in the Midwest. There's about 90,000 just in the U.S.
So if you know somebody who makes their living farming more than 2,000 acres,
correct.
It's Dale at Cropzilla.com, right?
Dale.Jefferson
at Cropzilla. Dale.Jefferson at Cropzilla.com. We had a meeting similar to this. We got a lead out of that for you. So I would like to hear a story next month about one lead that Dale got from somebody in the audience. We got to know a farmer. I'm from Wapakoneta, Ohio. Actually, a suburb called Buckland, Ohio. I know some farmers.
Well, there you go.
Be able to help you out.
Like I said, you're hired.
Anything you got to get off your chest here before I open it up to the group? We got to get some better questions than the ones I'm asking.
You know, off the top of my head, a couple things I wanted to mention is I said earlier, you have to fearlessly start selling as early as possible. That's just absolutely crucial. But it's also just as important to have somebody on your founding team who knows what they're doing for the market that you're trying to disrupt. So in our case, we have Brian Watkins, who's a sixth-generation farmer. He's been a farmer for 30 years. Like I said, he and I met getting our MBAs about the same time. And he is, he's kind of our prototypical, stereotypical customer. So we've kind of built the whole thing around what will help him solve his problem on his farm and just extrapolate from there into the marketplace. So just to have that core competency in-house once you have something, you don't even have to have a product yet to start selling. I mean, start pushing it out the door as quickly as you can, just like Blackwell said earlier. I mean, they're selling based on a demo.
And that's great advice, and it goes right into our Concept Academy methodology of sell before you have a product, get feedback on what your product's going to be before you ever sit down to build it. We build a lot of product that never gets used.
Right.
So we're trying to put an end to that. I do have one more question. So since you started Cropzilla, what's the one thing that you've learned that you wish you would have known day one of Cropzilla?
Well, I mean, look, that list is a really long list, and it keeps growing every week. You know, people will tell you, people who have done this before will tell you it's going to be harder than you think it is, and it's going to be really hard. And that's, I'll just tell you right now, there's nothing easy about this. I mean, so you have to love it. You have to be dedicated to it. You have to be willing to... like Greg said, just leave the security of whatever you're doing now and put it all out there, and you better be dedicated, your family better be dedicated, because it's hard.
Well, I congratulate you on your success, and yeah, it's not, being an entrepreneur is the hardest job you'll ever do, and you can enjoy it when it's over.
That's right.
So let's get to any questions for Cropzilla.
Hi. Hey. Do you ever work with farming co-ops or like a consortium or group of farmers?
You know, we have talked to a few co-ops. We actually have a channel that we've developed of consultants, of lenders, crop insurance folks, and some co-ops that we've talked to figure out how to best get our product to their customers. In most cases, whether you're a co-op or a bank focused on ag lending, you see a product like ours and you want to add value to the relationship that you have with the farmer, and so it only helps you to bring us in, and you might not be part of the transaction, of course, but it's hey, look, I'm adding value to the relationship, look, I'm bringing all this great new technology to the table. And so we have talked to a few co-ops, yeah, and it's been good.
That's what I was hoping to hear, so we'll talk more later.
Okay,
fantastic.
Excellent.
We're drumming up some leads.
Perfect.
Brian or Michael, you have any questions for Dale when he's on the hot seat here?
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Anyone else?
And I'm not answering those.
So you mentioned, Dale, it's easier to get to you know, the lead level in the sales cycle to the decision maker. What's been the average close time for you once you have that lead, and have you found anything that helps in that B2B market to get a qualified lead to close?
Well, again, you know, I've never been in a market or an industry quite like this, where if we can make contact with a farmer and schedule an online demo or an in-person demo over the next week or two, because they are the decision maker, they don't have to go get budget approval or anything like that, we'll know within a week or two after that demo if they're on board. Now, to set that, you know, to get in touch with them and to set the initial meeting might take a few weeks. But once you get that first meeting and once that ball is rolling, I mean, we have close times of 30 days, no more than 60. I mean, it's a really, in relation to a lot of the other things I've done in the past, it's a really fast cycle. And like we said earlier, in at least a few cases, Mike's had some success where you literally roll up on a farm on one day and within, you know, you do a demo 2 days later, and then within a couple days after that, you've closed a sale. I mean, it can be within a week. It's amazing.
So I appreciate what you've said about fearless selling, because that's truly what it takes. I don't know a whole lot about farming, but you mentioned 3-4 months of the year, it's kind of hard to touch that prospect or that customer because of the seasonality. So I imagine, maybe you could share with us how you, in your sales strategy, how farming takes place across the country, different seasons, different harvest times, and how you go about that and how you're plotting that out for your future sales success.
Sure. So it's true. I mean, in certain parts of the country, there are slightly different harvest times. So if you go down to, say, East Texas, they've typically planted or harvested before Ohio started or something like that. And we can mitigate some of that disruption in the cycle by looking at different geographies, and we're doing that now. But what we found is that it's really a matter of planning ahead of time. So when the customer's ready to talk to you, you've got to be ready to talk to the customer. So it's a matter of getting your materials ready, getting your trade shows lined out, getting, you know, most importantly, getting your list of customers that, you know, you want to talk to in the next few weeks, prioritize them, and all those, typically those databases for a number of different markets, not just agriculture, those kind of contacts are available. But the other side of that, to that coin, is that if you've got a sales team and they've got that much downtime, you've got to effectively utilize them. So again, because we're a SaaS company, it's all about planning for that as well, which means, you know, they all have industry experience, so they've got to be generating materials, you know, like to touch the customer, the tips and tricks. Here's how you creating little how-to videos, things like that, because in a SaaS company, it's all about customer retention. So you've got to plan for that too. And, you know, we are, as part of this raise, we're going to be hiring a couple of those folks, but we also recognize that we'll be able to utilize a sales team for at least part of the year to help do that as well.
Dale, what's the competitive landscape? What's status quo? What are most target farms doing now, and how's that changing? Big data for agriculture.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because what we've seen is that we've got a couple competitors. We all kind of started roughly the same time, more or less. And this is really a market that we're trailblazing. I mean, we are truly, us and two or three other companies are creating this, the idea that it's, you need to have this farm planning, enterprise level farm planning software. Historically, it's all been a farmer goes and they buy QuickBooks and they you know, Excel came with their laptop, and they're pretty much done at that point. And so now the idea that, you know, we can do a whole lot more with better software is kind of a new thing. So we've got a couple competitors. They're very well funded. One's based in San Francisco. They've raised a ton of money. One's based in Minneapolis. They've raised a ton of money. And hopefully we're right behind them, and we're going to do the same.
So, Dale, I am going to assume that you guys are going to go gangbusters and that you do really well. So now I'd like you to fast forward X number of years when you're now selling internationally and things are going well and you're able to translate this into other markets. So come with me on this.
I attended a couple of years ago an event at that the State Department put on in Washington, D.C., and it was about getting women in third world countries wired and tech savvy, so we're talking sub-Saharan Africa, we're talking Cameroon, we're talking rural India. And the people, the funding people in the room were all from IT companies. So you had the Nokias and the Qualcomms, and their thesis was she's a farmer who has inherited, maybe her husband has been killed, right? I mean, the way the world is now. And she's got a goat, and she's got a pretty good-sized farm. Give her a cell phone so she can check the weather forecast at the market where she's going to spend a half a day trying to get there selling her her crops. So if she can find out that there's going to be a monsoon or whatever and the market is closed, you can help this woman, right? Blah, blah, blah. So now think about scaling this up in a different way with your technology, the way that you could empower groups that heretofore have not had access to this kind of technology. Have you thought about going that way, to just using the whole tech idea to help, I'm just going to say women especially.
Sure, sure. Well, the short answer is we haven't specifically focused on that necessarily. That said, we have thought about what can we do, because right now we've got this big enterprise level piece of software, and it's good, you know, you need to have several thousand acres to kind of get it churning and realize an ROI effectively pretty quickly. That said, we have looked at how can we take pieces of what we've done and create apps that would help maybe smaller farmers, or in some cases bigger farmers that, you know, they don't want the full product now, but, you know, it's a way to establish a beachhead into that customer. So while we haven't necessarily thought, you know, in a purely philanthropic sense of how do we help women in Africa, for example, I do see a case where we could take some of these app ideas that we're working on that would help smaller farms in impoverished areas. And you know, certainly we would talk about that and consider it.
Dale, I'm Michelle Gregg with Crop Health Laboratories. We do nutrient management for farmers in a unique way. And I'm just curious, with all of the regulation that's coming down the pike for nutrient management, especially for agriculturalists, is there anything in your software currently or that you see in the future that's going to help growers better manage their regulatory status?
Not right now, but we have had some feedback from customers on documentation, especially in Europe. The regulatory environment in Europe is far more onerous, if you will, than it is here in the U.S. And we have had some customers say, in order to use the software over there, effectively, in some cases, you have to have documentation to hand over to the local government and things like that on what you're, you know, specifically on the chemicals you're using, fertilizers, things like that. That hasn't played as big of a role so far in the U.S., but, you know, certainly maybe we should talk, and if you know of some things coming down the road that we need to start paying attention to, that'd be helpful.
Dale, I want to thank you. It's been fun working with you here.
Absolutely.
And pleasure today. Thank you very much. All right. For sharing your experiences with us. Everyone, we do this monthly. You'll get the invite. Love to see you back here next month for the next Founders Lunch.
Thanks.